tijiki tek utamo wangwa kati uwe muna kode
chiju tinde tek
nyero muna huyo kotege
kata kanga tokawi
unge angane ngeluwe nyo tseche nyuto te
nyirigi yawa nyirigi
aworo uyawa
nyirigi yawa nyirigi
Nyero kamuganga, nyero makamaonge tich, nyero listening to A Musical Talk, and WIR would like to thank RVA Magazine for its underwriting support. RVA Magazine is a free monthly publication providing coverage of Richmond's arts and music scene while offering editorials and opinions about the events, people, and happenings of our awesome town. RVA is available at many local coffee houses, bookstores, and retail locations throughout the city. RVA Magazine is on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter, and at rvamag.com. So stay tuned for this interview with Extra Golden. Thanks.
I will start out by letting people know that we're speaking with Alex Minoff. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, Minoff.
Alex Minoff of the band Extra Golden. And how's it going? You guys are currently back, I guess just back from a tour in the UK?
Yeah, we got back, I guess we got back about 2 weeks ago.
About 2 weeks ago? And you were doing some shows with Baba Mal, is that correct?
Yeah, we did with Baba Mal and Oliver Mtukudzi.
Yeah.
For a couple weeks. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet.
We played 10 shows, and they were all in England. Played, you know, most of the places you would expect, and then we played maybe some places that you might not expect.
Like what?
Well, you know, we played in, you know, London and Brighton and Manchester and Newcastle and Liverpool, but then we also played in, I guess the smallest place we played was a town called Poole,
mm-hmm.
which is on the coast. Leicester, Coventry, Basingstoke, maybe that's it.
Yeah. And how many different members of the band are currently, you know, touring?
Our touring lineup is five people. It's me and Ian, and then our drummer, Onyango,
uh-huh.
Mari, and then Onyango Jagwasi,
right,
singer, and then we have a bass player that has done every tour with us, but he never appears on our records. Partially through his choice, but his name is Noel Coopersmith.
Okay, and you guys just released an album pretty recently called Thank You Very Quickly,
mm-hmm.
on Thrill Jockey Records.
Right.
And how long have you been with Thrill Jockey?
Well, this is our third record, and they've all been with Thrill Jockeys. So,
okay.
Yeah, our first one came out in 2006.
Right. Now, the first one, that was Ok Oyot System.
Mm-hmm.
That was recorded in Nairobi, right?
Yeah, sure.
And that was sort of a culmination of some time you spent there studying first. Your original reason for going there was to study Kenyan music, is that correct?
Well, that was Ian.
Ian
Eagleson, the other American member of the group.
Okay.
He was studying for his PhD. He was living there for a year at that time. And Ian and I had known each other and played in bands together since about 1993. So, you know, we've always shared a love of African music. So I went over to visit while he was there. And, you know, we'd been writing songs together for a really long time, so the band that we had been playing in had kind of stopped playing, but we had continued to write songs together anyway.
Yeah.
We didn't really have any way to present them, but so I went there to hang out and to work on some of our songs, and then the recording just ended up kind of happening, and even then we never really thought, like, oh, this will be a band, you know.
Right.
Kind of like this thing that happened, and then...
When you say just kind of happening, this is really curious to me because Ian was over there, you know, working on his PhD,
mm-hmm.
studying this music that he loved, obviously, and met up with Otieno, the late Otieno Jagwasi,
mm-hmm.
And then some other musicians, right, who were playing in the Buruburu neighborhood.
Well, he'd been, he knew, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of musicians. Otieno was kind of his right-hand man.
Yeah,
in terms of him, like, getting around and getting to meet other people, Otieno was his kind of entree into that world.
Yeah.
And he was great because he was, A, super talented, very much in demand in terms of, you know, studio recordings for guitar soloists, but he was also really well-liked by everybody.
And
he was a great guy. So he knew everybody.
Right.
And everybody knew him and was willing to do favors for him, ultimately meaning for Ian. So that, yeah, he was great for that. I think the fact that Ian was offering to record bands for free.
Yeah.
Basically, the payment was that he wanted to interview you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, free recording is not something that happens in Kenya.
Right.
So people were very happy to take advantage of that.
And that recording apparatus was known as the Nayati Otenga.
Nayati Otenga's Flying Studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really just, I mean, it's a laptop, a small mixing board, a handful of mics. But, you know, it was portable, so he was able to take it, you know, throughout the country. So he
yeah.
didn't just do recordings in Nairobi. He did them in some very remote places, too.
And you flew over after he was already sort of established there.
Yeah, I mean, he'd been there several times, and then this time, he actually met Otieno in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And then this time he went over, like, right towards the end of 2003. And
yeah.
stayed for a year. And I went there, in April of 2004.
Yeah. And did you guys pretty much just get right to work on that project at that point?
Well, no, that's really the thing, is that we did not have that project in mind.
No. Just for you to come check it out.
Yeah, well, you know, it was just kind of like, he'd been there a few times. We knew he was going to be there for a while. So, and because we both really, you know, enjoyed the music, we just always kind of fantasized, like, oh, it'd be great if we could hang out in Nairobi or, you know, somewhere. And,
yeah.
And just check out some music and just, you know, have some fun. And so that was, you know, that was the main goal of my trip, the main purpose. And then also to work on some songs that we had already been working on. And then that's, it was never the idea like, oh, we'll take our songs and we'll get some dudes there to play with us and then we'll have this band. But
No, it just happened naturally.
Yeah, it was cool because, you know, we were working on the songs like during the day or just at random times. And Otieno was, he was just around all the time,
yeah.
a lot of the time, you
yeah.
know.
You play guitar?
Yes.
Ian also?
Yeah.
So, and then Otieno was singing?
He was singing, and he also played some guitar.
Yeah, so there's three different guitarists kind of working together.
Yeah, on that album, he actually, now that I think about it, he only plays guitar on two songs on the album. He plays bass on a song, too.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he sings on, like, four of the songs, I think.
Yeah. And the Kenyan guitar style, I mean, it's distinctive. It's really hard to describe.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, you know, it's like melodic. It's like mostly single note, melodic variations on a rhythmic theme,
uh-huh.
basically.
Yeah.
Like is a way that I kind of see it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you'll have like one or two rhythm guitars that are kind of like, you know, repeating something that kind of locks in rhythmically, and then the soloist might come in with a third rhythm and then repeat that a few times and then maybe start breaking off from that, and then like almost every line he plays is something that you could just take as a new rhythm line
yeah.
and repeat over and over, but it's just like, you know, constantly changing and evolving. When it's done well, it's and Otieno did it very well. I mean, he was an exceptional soloist. So he was really a joy to listen to.
The song Gimakini Akia mm-hmm. on the new EP, that's got one of those really amazing opening progressions of guitar. And it's got a really deep sound. You have to tune the guitars differently to get that sort of deeper sound?
We tune our guitars to a standard, just standard tuning. But we do it, our group, we tune everything one whole step down.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess that song does utilize the open string, so it would be technically, I mean, we call it E, because...
That's where it is on the guitar.
Exactly, but really, if you were using European standards, it would be a D.
Yeah, it just, I noticed this in a lot of your songs, that it's just so much richer and fuller, and I guess maybe that's because of the multiple guitars and the bass in there, but I guess there's also that thing with, also the song Pini Yori Yori,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of that harmonized guitar where it's, you know, it's just beautiful stuff. So
yeah, that's another song that utilizes some open strings.
What is that song about?
Pignore Yore?
Yeah.
I
mean, I don't want to like fall into the trap of asking you every single song, but
fine. You know, to be honest with you, I'm happy because like no one ever asks us about our music.
Yeah.
People always want to know about like circumstances surrounding it, but like it's refreshing to actually have someone ask you a question about the thing that you spend so much time working on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, the music. Yeah. You know, says so much. I mean, I definitely want to get to the circumstances too. But the song "Pina Yori Yori" is that the opening track on that?
It's the third track.
The third track, sorry.
Yeah.
And who is that singing in the beginning?
That's Onyango Jagwasi.
Okay.
Yeah, that's his brother.
His brother, right?
Yeah. That song, you know, it's like I've had him explain to me the meaning of that song many times, and it's still a little bit confusing to me.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, he always says it has something to do with, like, and this is something that's kind of common in a lot of, like, Luo language banga music, is this sort of sense of trying to make sense of the world, or not even trying to make sense of it, but just kind of this recognition of, like, yeah, like, the world is a strange place, you know? Like,
yeah,
there are things going on that I don't understand, you know?
Yeah.
And then maybe that'll be like a common kind of theme or introduction lyrically, and then maybe it'll go into something a little more specific. But that song is kind of one of those kinds of songs. Just that, you know, it's a strange world. It has something to do with like men and women getting married,
mm-hmm.
or not getting married.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still, every time he explains it to me, he's like, you know? I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
You need to go to the end.
That's another song that kind of comes from that worldview. The world is a strange place. That one in particular, Night Runners, are these sort of creatures in Luo folklore that come out at night. They try to disturb you, and that you can't sleep. They make you not be able to sleep, and just sort of this kind of interesting creature. And when they were explaining to us about the Night Runners, they're called Judge Walk. Ian and I thought that it was pretty funny, so we decided that song, we wanted it to be about the Night Runners. Which was maybe a little bit of a strange idea for them to write a song about Night Runners. But we said, let's do that. So then the Luo lyrics that a guitarist named Opio Bilongo, who played with us on that album, he came up with some lyrics that were kind of expressing that. He was expressing the concept of the Night Runners from someone who's coming from outside that culture.
Yeah.
And looking at it and saying, this is strange, this is something that, where I come from, we don't have something like this.
Right.
And I thought that was really cool, because that was kind of like, lyrically, kind of coming from a different territory than maybe they would normally come from, And I think that's, ultimately one of the cool things about our band is doing things that maybe are not what we would normally do, or something that haven't been brought up to do, or practiced to do.
Or people in Kenya also,
Well, exactly, and in that song lyrically being a case like that.
And here's that song that he was just talking about, Night Runners, Extra Golden.
Want to
Setup that people are playing in bingo bands over there?
No. I mean, you know, that's interesting also because, like, I mean, in terms of the equipment we use, like guitars or anything like that, I mean, you know, we just use what we have available to us.
Yeah.
Which is generally of much higher quality than what you would find in a club in Kenya. You know, the whole thing with, like, effect pedals, is interesting because, you know, a lot of people, I would say that the inspiration for Ian and my guitar playing is, like, a whole lot of it comes from African guitar, and not necessarily just Kenyan guitar.
Right.
But, like, lots of other African guitar styles. You know, a lot of people hear us using effects, especially, like, distortions or fuzz pedals and things like that, and they immediately chalk that up to some kind of, like, rock fixation, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, African guitarists have been using effect pedals since the 60s.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the times that we use fuzz, like, to me, it sounds much more like, you know, like Extra Musica or some kind of thing like that, as opposed to, like, you know, trying to sound like whoever, you know? I mean, so, and when we were in England, you know, that was something I was hearing a lot, because we were playing these shows with Baba Mal and Oliver Mtukudzi, so, and we were playing in these sort of concert halls, like really nice venues.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I think there were people who came to those concerts who maybe kind of challenged what they were perceiving as African music.
This whole concept of world music that was sort of like formulated in the 80s, and then now, like, people are just starting to, you know, wake up to the fact that, like, even just in Nigeria alone, there were just so many different styles.
Mm-hmm.
And like what you're saying, you're challenging audiences to say, well, these guys in Kenya were already there. It's not like this is something they're adopting, you know.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, people, when they go to see African music, they want to see, and it was funny because Baba Mal, we played right before Baba Mal, and then, you know, we were kind of like the stepchildren on the tour, you know.
Yeah.
and then Baba Mal would come out, you know, and they'd all be dressed in these, like, robes and sitting down and, you know, playing traditional songs. And that's what people want to see. They want to see someone who looks like a prince, in their minds.
Yeah.
Who is performing this music that is like 800 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And he comes out and does that, but then like as his set goes on, it becomes, he stands up, it becomes more and more like upbeat, and then like by the end, it's totally rocking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, to the point where even the last few nights, Ian and I played guitar on stage at the end on his last song,
because
just like, it was a funk jam, you know?
Yeah, man. And then you've got songs that deal with, you know, American themes, like Street Parade, based on struggles of people in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hearing, musically, a lot of vocal inspiration. Sounds like the Neville Brothers in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things about Extra Golden is, you know, it's generally kind of written, oh, this is Kenyon Benga meets American indie rock, you know?
Right.
And, like, you know, in some ways that's true. I mean, you know, we're on Thrill Jockey and whatever. But, like, musically, I mean, the American inspirations that Ian and I garner or pull from, I don't know if indie rock is really the best way to describe
what
our musical inspiration is.
belong OPO.
A man can try.
When are you Jack Orlando?
What is man?
We'll call it Johnny Mike Sacco.
Well, yeah.
Hey, quiet, are you at Orlando?
Jack, I'm
not. But you're born, where are you?
All go your system.
We're calling that to Junior.
So we're going to continue the interview here with Alex Minoff of Extra Golden. Thanks for staying tuned.
I do want to go back to the thing about pedals real quick.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's all along these same lines. People saying like, oh, yeah, what are they doing with this distortion or blah, blah, blah. And it gets a little frustrating sometimes, especially in the context of that tour where people are so kind of, some people are kind of unaccepting of that. I mean, in general, everything was great. I don't mean to speak ill of the tour because it was really amazing and the reception was great.
But as far as music critics go,
well, there's always a few dissenting voices, so
yeah.
So I have to speak to them.
Okay.
But it was after one show in particular, and I was talking with Oliver's bassist, this guy named Never, who is really really cool guy, and he's been playing in bands in Zimbabwe since the early 70s.
Wow.
And we were talking about we were talking about my guitar, and then we started talking about effects. And he said, and we were talking about this exact thing. And he said, you know, when I started playing music, he said in the 70s in Zimbabwe, you were not a guitarist unless you had fuzz and distortion. You know, like you had to have that stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like that stuff sounded great. He's like, and now. He's like, people maybe got away from it, and now some people use it, but it doesn't sound nearly as good as it used to.
Right.
You know, the tones and whatever. So he was very, you know, encouraging and kind of like, yeah, you guys are doing the right thing.
What are the clubs like? What kind of a social scene is it around those clubs in Nairobi?
I mean, that's really what it is. It's a social scene. It's not so much, I can't speak definitively because, you know, my experience is limited to one time there. But, you know, I can say some things for sure, which is that, you know, the bands, it's different. The bands there play at a club 5 nights a week. So it's like, and Otieno's band did that. So it was like, people weren't necessarily going there like, oh, we've got to go see Otieno Jagwasi's band.
Yeah.
You know, it's more like, people go there to dance and to drink.
Yeah.
And to meet and have fun. And, you know, if people aren't coming there to drink and dance, then, you know, you're not going to be working there very long.
Yeah.
You know? But it is work. It's a job. It's like, it's not, I mean, obviously, you know, there are bands of different levels of fame, and people will go see the bigger bands, you know?
Yeah.
But it's, it's more like, you know, there's just a lot of, it's like a jukebox almost, you know. I mean, his band was playing his compositions and compositions of other people in the group, and then popular songs of the time. You know, they have to be able to do everything. I mean, you know, they're playing at 6 o'clock in the evening on a Wednesday or 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah.
The bands are definitely not, they're not like cranked, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're, because like a lot of the gear they're using, a lot of, I mean, even if they wanted to be cranked, they couldn't because,
right.
I mean, the drum set, like the drum set at the Annex that we used to record on the first record, I mean, you could barely hear that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The, like, you know, the heads were ripped. They're not using like Vic Firth drumsticks, you know, they're using, like, literally sticks.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they have to kind of control their volume a little bit.
Yeah.
In order to be able to be effective.
And are the songs going into like long extended, you know?
Yeah, the songs are long.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have a song go for 10 minutes before it changes at all, or, you know, depending on the verse lyric, you know, it can go longer than that, and then it'll go into the climax where, you know, the beat picks up and it's more of like the dance section.
Yeah.
And that can go for 15 minutes, you know, yeah. 20 minutes.
Can you tell me about that particular recording session, that first one, just that day, what you remember? How long did it take? It was 3 hours or?
Yeah, well, I remember we'd been kind of working on these songs for a couple weeks, and it was getting close to when I was going to be leaving. So we decided, you know, we should try and record these and do it with some drums. So I think we recorded on a Thursday. So on Wednesday, like, we made arrangements with the owner of Annex to be able to come down there in the afternoon around, like, 1 o'clock to use the gear there and the space. So those guys knew Onyango, our drummer. He wasn't our drummer then, but they knew him, and he was... kind of like Otieno in that he was very much like, you know, when people needed a drummer for their session, like, he was one of the first people they'd call.
Yeah.
And he played with Otieno for a long time. So they Ian, you know, they both knew him, they both liked him, and Ian definitely felt like he had the musical chops or flexibility to be able to do things that weren't the norm. So yeah, we called him the day before the recording, and he came over, and we played him some recordings of the songs, and he checked them out. And then we said, all right, tomorrow, 1 o'clock, meet us at the Annex Club, you know? Yeah, okay, cool. You know, I'd never even met him before. That was the first I'd seen him in Kenya. So he's like, yeah, all right, I'll come down. So then, you know, we got all the stuff together, Ian's recording stuff together, and we took a taxi to the Annex and brought it all in, and then I think it was like, you know, kind of started setting it up, and then, like, you know, it became 1:30 and he wasn't there, you know. Like, yeah. I wonder if he's going to come. Like, we didn't know if he was going to even show up.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, we called him, couldn't get in touch with him, and then, like, you know, 15 more minutes passes, like, we've got everything kind of set up. It's like, man, where's Onyango? And then, you know, he finally showed up after he was late, and we breathed a sigh of relief. In fact, he and I were just talking about this like 2 weeks ago. We were talking about that, we were reminiscing about that session, and I said, we didn't think you were going to show up. Aren't you glad you showed up? And of course of course I was going to show up. You know, it was just something, you know, something was holding. I forget. He had some really lame excuse as for why he was late, as usual. But
yeah, the laundry, something, I don't know.
Yeah, something really lame. But anyway, so yeah, you know, we use the equipment that belonged to the club, because in Kenya, most of the musicians, they don't own any of their own equipment, guitars, you know. So club owners have everything. So they had this really broken down drum set, and then they had a couple guitar amps that were like Roland guitar amps. And we put one in this room, kind of like, I don't really know how to describe this, but like, basically there was like the room where the tables and chairs and the bar and the band played.
Yeah.
And then sort of behind that, off to the side, there was this sort of like little concrete patch that had a little tin roof over it, but it was basically outside. And from there, there was like a little office for the owner. And then to the other side, there was next to that office, there was another room that was basically just like full of stuff. Like I don't even like just like stuff piled everywhere. Like there was barely any space in the room at all.
Yeah.
We put an amp in there, and then on the other side of that little patch, there is like where you go to the restrooms. So we set up the equipment there and the drums kind of just off to the side and put one of the amps in this little, like, storage room.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, we did, the first song we recorded, I think, was the first song on the record, and we kind of ran through bits of it just to kind of test and make sure everything was working. And then we played that song all the way through, and then we just went to the other ones, and the other ones we only played once. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was it. So, it really didn't last very long. I mean, it really only took a couple hours.
Yeah.
And we probably didn't even play for more than an hour, really. So, and that was the foundation of the record. Anything we didn't get there, we had to do direct input. So,
wow.
The majority of the guitar on that first record is recorded direct.
Yeah.
Which is not typical.
Well, just going back to the musical sounds, I mean, it's this Yando Gimaonge.
Yolando Gimaonge, yeah.
Yolando, amazing guitar tone on that one.
Yes. With your Dinga studio.
nyajoge Aba baby ji Asongo lera nyajoge Ate china Wabayo godo achalurude Jatungo leo Nga mamula ere nyitindo yuwa Kimedoga wano nila Kichogo jomanyero ere Kimawana wano nila Kichogo jomanyero ere Kagiri ngato tomi tindi Samiche madimba
Listening to WIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. And as we speak, a new studio is coming together. Lots of volunteers here doing a lot of hard work, so big thanks to all of them, and especially our operations director and engineers all doing their work here. And we couldn't run this radio station without them, so big thanks to everyone involved. So it's almost 8 o'clock, and we'll continue on with this extra golden special interview with Alex Minoff.
The first album, Okoyot System. Am I pronouncing that right?
Okoyot.
Okoyot.
Yeah.
And that's a phrase that's often used sort of just as, you know, an exclamation, right?
Right, right.
Which means not easy.
It's not easy.
And that refers again to that sort of existential thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really beautiful thing because it has meanings on many layers, you know. First of all, if you're playing in a band that's got to play for 14 hours, you know, that's not easy. You know, I mean, seriously, I mean, that's literally what they're saying.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, there are bigger picture levels to that.
Yeah.
That saying that are also very true.
Here's that track, Okoyot System.
So I took the the other tracks home and actually mixed them with Jonathan Kreinick. We mixed it like a couple weeks after I got home. It was really funny though. It was one of those perfect moments because when I was leaving, we were like, what are we going to do? Like, we're going to mix this stuff. We should call Jonathan when we get home and we'll see if he can help us out. And then just like the weirdest coincidence, my girlfriend came to pick me up at the airport with Jonathan. And it was like, it was just completely unexpected and something I never would have expected in a million years. And
yeah.
Jonathan just shows up at the airport. And I was like, you're just the man I want to talk to. Because he was always traveling, so like he was barely ever around.
Right, you were going to have to round him up somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And then he just showed up at the airport, so that was nice. But anyway, yeah, so we mixed it, all of it except the one track. And then pretty much right after I got home. And then it was a year went by, and we had the last track, which was Okoyot System. Otieno had to lay down a vocal on it. So he did that, and then Ian sent me that stuff. But, you know, I was just sitting on it. We just didn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was about a little over a year after I got home in 2005 when he passed away. So Ian and I basically, you know, like literally 4 days later, Ian was in D.C. We were mixing the last song and finishing it up. So that kind of spurred us to finish. And that was 2005. And then the record didn't come out for another year after that. I don't really recall any kind of like attempt to get any tone. It was really just like, we just need to set everything up and do this as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there were people there. They weren't closed. One like, point during Nya Jondere, the last song on the record, where you can hear, like, someone opening the door, like, right next to us to go to the bathroom. So we were really just trying to get in and out of there.
Yeah.
As quickly as possible.
Was he with Otieno, you know, during his illness?
Well, he actually, before I got there, he had been really ill. And then went to the hospital, was completely misdiagnosed, and then ended up at a different hospital. And they said, like, they had told the first hospital he went to said that he had kidney problems, and they were treating him for that. And nothing, like, he was not getting any better. In fact, he was getting a lot worse. And then Ian took him to a different hospital, and they said, no, you don't have any kidney problems, you have liver problems. And then, I mean, he was on the verge then I mean, he was really not in good shape.
Man.
When they found, when he was correctly diagnosed.
And oh, man.
He was, they basically saved and brought him back. And then when I was there, he was pretty much totally normal.
Yeah.
It had been several months since then.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think he pretty much was okay. By the time Ian left, I think he was still fine. It was another 6 months after Ian left when he actually died. So I think he'd had like a couple little relapses, but
yeah.
I mean, it's tough in Kenya, you know, when you're a musician.
Sure.
Like
healthcare and
yeah.
all that.
I mean, it's just
it's not
a good situation.
Well, it's a tragedy, and then you know, part of your music. There's quite a few songs that I hear. Dealing with the ideas of, you know, losing love, you know, brother's gone away. Can you describe Otieno? Just what was he like?
Well, you know, I mean, I knew him when
just
I was there. That
briefly,
was, I,
right?
That
yeah.
was it, you know.
But was he a quiet guy? I mean,
he the thing I remember the most about him was his laugh. Had a great laugh, and it's like on Okoyot System, like the very beginning of the album and the very end of the album, have him laughing, and that's you know, when I think of him, I just always the first thing image in my head is like him sitting in a chair in Ian's apartment laughing. But yeah, I mean, he was just, you know, he was a very solid guy,
yeah.
and a really, really awesome musician. You know, the thing that we did with him, like, you know, a lot of musicians in Kenya, even like some of the really good ones, you know, like, I think that it would have been sort of like difficult for them, or like a lot of people just wouldn't be able to do what he did. But like the first song on that album, Ilando Gimaonge, that was his song. And we just, I mean, he'd already recorded that song, and it was like, it was known in Kenya. And then we basically just took the song that Ian and I had been writing and took his song and like mashed them together. So like the vocal melody and the lyrics and the guitar part that he plays are exactly the same as his song, but like all of the other music is completely different. So that was the first time, like when that worked, when we realized that we could take his song, which like chord wise was like a very standard kind of Banga 1-4-5 progression in a major key in C. When we realized that when we could take that and transpose it onto this song in the key that we were using, like it was like all of a sudden like these doors opened in front of us and we were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Because like every guitar part that Otieno played in his song, like the main melodies and even the solo, you know, we were just like, do what you would normally do.
Yeah.
Like, and then we're going to play these different chords.
Yeah, totally on top of it.
And it was just like, it worked. And we were like, wow. Like, we were, like, Ian and I just kind of looked at each other like, did this just happen? You know?
Yeah. And he was open to that kind of thing, too.
Well, he was totally open to it. And he was, you know, it takes more than just being open to it. It takes, like, the ability to do it.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And it was just really easy for him. And, that was, you know, definitely remarkable.
Part of his talent.
Really. He was a real musician, you know.
Yeah. I guess people in Richmond listening can catch you on April 10th in Baltimore at the Florist Tree, and in D.C. on April 14th at Comet Pizza.
Yeah, D.C. is going to be the closest to Richmond.
Yeah.
This time around.
Yeah. But, I mean, so you weren't even planning on touring for this? You
no,
really
it was right around when the album came out. Like, the album came out, I think, in May of 2006, and I think it was, like, right at the end of April or beginning of May, that Michael Orlov from the Chicago World Music Festival contacted our label, and, you know, offered the possibility of bringing Extra Golden to play in Chicago at that festival.
Yeah.
You know, and we'd never, you know, we never thought of it as a live band, obviously. And then, you know, that offer came in right before the album came out, and then Ian and I started thinking about it. We could try it, you know, we could try to make something happen, and see if it worked.
Was that hard to sort of think about going back and doing something completely new after it was, you know, after the death of Otiano? And I mean, was there a hurdle there, you know, to go on and say, oh, let's do this? You know, how big of a commitment was that for you?
Well, do you mean in terms of, like, maybe not wanting to do it because he wasn't involved?
Yeah, or like, you know, is it just not going to be the same?
Well, I think immediately off the bat we knew it wasn't going to be the same. So I think we just saw it as an opportunity to maybe, like, continue what we had done, which, you know, we really had so little time making that first record, like everything that went into it.
Right, so there must have been something else there at work also.
Yeah, so it was just kind of like, you know, obviously it's not going to be the same, but we can make something, maybe we can make something, you know, equally as interesting.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like basically, you know, having the Chicago World Music Festival invite you puts you in a position where, like, you know, you're going to be able to at least get close to start paying for, like, your visas and their plane tickets.
Yeah.
But with this opportunity, like, well, you know, this is going to maybe make it possible to get these guys over here.
Yeah.
And then once they're here, we can, like, maybe play some more and try and record, you know?
Yeah, make another album.
Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't that, like, we didn't have, like, the, you know, expectations to rule the world. We just wanted to see what happened. The fact that we knew that it wasn't going to be the same, I mean, is pretty much hammered home by the fact that we got Opio Bilongo to replace Otieno, because his style was completely different, and his voice, his singing, like everything about him was like opposite ends of the Benga spectrum from Otieno.
Yeah,
but we really liked his music a lot, and Ian had worked with him; he'd recorded him. So we just thought, you know, let's do this. And we'll get someone who's obviously not going to replace Otieno, but he's totally different, you know?
Yeah.
He couldn't replace Otieno. Like, he just naturally, his whole thing is totally different. So, that was kind of our way of, like, you know, taking a stab at it.
Yeah.
And then there was the whole process of actually ending up in the same room in Chicago, but...
Right, which was a huge ordeal in itself.
It was major, major, like... the most difficult thing that I've ever had to do in my life.
And that's when you turned to Obama's administration.
Yeah, yeah.
The office there.
He was just a junior senator back then.
Yeah.
But
I mean, had that link with Kenya that you...
Right. Well, his
in
father
on.
Was from West Kenya, basically from almost exactly where the guys in our band are from. They're, you know, the same... They're Luo, the same... From same tribal... some ethnic group.
Yeah.
And obviously he was the senator of Illinois.
Yeah.
Where the festival was. So
yeah.
It was, you know.
Perfect.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
It took us a long time to get to that point, and the idea of calling him was something that Ian and I talked about for months before we did it.
Yeah.
At first it was kind of like we were having a laugh, and then as things got more and more down to the wire, we kind of started to become less of a joke.
Yeah.
And then in the end it really turned into, like, this is our only option and this is the only way that this can possibly work.
Why was there so much difficulty in getting those
numbers? The first obstacle was that the Kenyans didn't have passports. So, and getting a passport, you know, they needed to get passports and they needed to get them fairly quickly. Well, the main problem is that in order to apply for their visas, you can't begin that process until you have a passport.
Yeah.
So we couldn't, you know, we were invited at the beginning of May, and it was like the last week in July, and we still didn't have the passports, you know? I mean, we finally got them, like, right around the end of July, and which meant we had just, like, 5 weeks before the festival, basically. So then, you know, then we had to apply for the visas, and we did that through, we expedited it, which means that within 10 days or 14 days, they'll at least respond to you,
yeah,
either to approve or deny or ask for more. So they ended up asking for more. They wanted to know more about the guys. They wanted more letters of recommendation. So that's when we realized we had to call Obama because we had, I mean, the only way, the time was just getting so short because once you even get approved, then it's not done. They have to get interviewed at the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi.
Yeah.
That's like, that appointment is like a 6 to 8 week wait.
Yeah.
You know, and at this point we're like 5 to 6 weeks away and haven't gotten the visa approved.
Wow.
So, and you know, there was a day where we basically decided with Thrill Jockey, like, okay, we're going through with this. We're putting the money in, and we realized when we applied for the visas and spent the money for the expedited fee, which was, you know, was non-refundable.
Yeah.
That was the day we realized, like, this isn't going to happen unless something special happens.
Yeah.
There has to be some kind of intervention. Like, just us doing this by our normal means will not make this happen.
And that certain special...
We're going all in anyway.
Right. So you took the gamble.
It was a leap of faith.
And then you also knew that you needed another miracle on top of that, which was a junior senator named Barack Obama.
Yeah. Well, that was still a couple weeks away at that point.
Okay.
And you know, I had meant... I mean, I'm not trying to call anybody out, but I had mentioned the possibility of calling Obama's office to our label. And they were basically like, that's not going to work. You know, and I mean...
That's a long shot.
Yeah, it was a long shot. I mean, I totally understand their thinking there. Basically saying, like, you can't rely on that because it's not going to happen.
Right.
But, you know, it ended up happening. And, you know, if it hadn't been for that... So, they came back to us and they said... we need to know more. We need more letters of recommendation or whatever. Or they might not have even asked for more letters. They just said, we need more.
Yeah.
And that was, I got the call. They said they need more. I got off the phone. I picked up the phone. I called Obama's office, gave him my spiel. And then she was like, yeah, I think we can help you. And then, you know, so that day we got a letter of recommendation, you know, signed by Obama on his letterhead, delivered it to Homeland Security, you know, a couple days later, you've been approved. At which point, then we had to get the appointment for them to do the interview.
Yeah.
The way you get that appointment is online, so there's no humans involved.
Oh, great.
So I think the soonest appointment we could get was like September 29th.
Oh, perfect.
And this was in the middle of August. And, you know, the World Music Festival was like September 10th.
Oh, man.
So, you know, then I called the office again and told them the situation. They managed to get us an appointment like 3 days later. They went to that appointment, and then at the embassy, they didn't give them the visa. They said, no, we need... I you guys got to come back. You don't have this one form with you, you know? And which was really weird because it was like, basically, the form that they didn't have was the form from Homeland Security that says you've been approved.
Right.
Which you would assume that a United States embassy would have some kind of contact with United States Homeland Security.
Right.
So that there could be some kind of communication that said, this application has been cleared. But they didn't have the actual form that you get in the mail. Because of the way that the interview had been pushed through
by
the office. So we never actually had received... We received the email and the phone call, oh, congratulations, you've been approved.
But the letter had...
sending you a physical approval letter in 7 to 10 days.
Yeah, and nobody ever put a stamp on that one.
Right, so they didn't have the actual letter that got sent to the house.
Right.
So the embassy was like, sorry, you'll have to come back. So I just remember they called us, you know, and... They're at the embassy at like 8 in the morning, whereas it's like 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning here. And they're like, they denied us. We don't have P3. We're like, what is P3, you know? So we had to figure out what that was. It's like, which, you know, we figured out. And then eventually, so basically they ended up getting another interview set up by Obama's office. Now, their flights to come to the U.S. were on Friday night, about a week before a week before the festival.
Yeah.
And they got their appointment at the embassy Friday morning.
Oh, my God.
So basically, they went out to the embassy, and the embassy is like an hour outside of Nairobi. It's ever since the bombing, they moved it, and it's really far out. So they go to the embassy at 7 in the morning. I get on the phone here. It's like 2 in the morning. Ian's on the phone in New York talking to them. Ian and I are talking to each other. And then Michael Orlov, the festival promoter, and Jenna Pilot, the woman from Obama's office, are on their phones in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
She went into the office at 1 in the morning.
Oh, my God. That's huge. That
yeah,
says
so
a lot.
She's on the phone with the embassy in Nairobi. And then, yeah, I mean, it was like this international phone...
phone tag.
Phone tag, basically.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ghana. Yelele, 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 mama fari. Yelele, 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 mama fari. Yelele, 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 pongezi kwako. Yelele, 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 pongezi kwako.
It's all pretty phonetic, so
okay.
Just like Paramanono.
Yeah.
You know, just like it looks.
There's another song, I Miss You, which is, I think, my one of my favorites on there. It's got a slide guitar.
Thank you.
you know, that's funny, that song, that was one of Bilongo's songs, and you know, that song sounds very much kind of like, if you listen to it, it sounds like it's a pretty simple love song, like, you know, I miss you, oh, you know.
Yeah, and then there's the part about, like, what are you going to, are you going to miss me with those dirty women?
Basically, the message in that song is like, if you're not really paying attention, it just sounds like a love song. But really, when he's singing those parts, like "I miss you," he's singing in a mocking tone of like someone telling him, like his woman telling him that she misses him, but really she's like cheating on him. Jacolando is basically a song about Otieno, and that was his nickname, Jacolando.
Okay.
And his brother, Onyango, sang that song. He was not in the U.S. with us, but we sent that song to Kenya, and he went into a studio and tracked vocals for it. It's also his nickname. It basically means, like, someone coming from Olando, like, which is like an area, is part of the area where those guys come from in West Kenya.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a really common... It's a common, like, way of making a nickname. Like, for example, our drummer comes from a town called Oyugis, so you can call him Jack Oyugis. So, yeah, so Jack Olando is about Otieno.
This new EP, only, like, 6 or 7 songs on the new one?
6 songs, but I want to dispel the notion that it's an EP, because...
Okay.
The reason that it's an EP...
Is because there's 6 songs.
It only has 6 songs, so iTunes can't sell it as a full-length album, because if they sell the songs individually, it's cheaper than their $9.99 album.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So they determine that it's an EP.
Oh.
But really, it's 38 minutes long.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's and that happened some with our first album, too, because it was only 6 songs.
Right.
Even though it was, like, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
But iTunes sells that as an album, because a couple of the songs are long enough that they don't sell them individually.
Right.
So they can charge an album price for it.
There's a few songs on here that are really interesting to me, and then, you know, obviously the title, Thank You Very Quickly, I'm thinking, does this have to do with the violence that happened after the elections in Kenya?
Yeah, that song is, basically that song is a thank you to everyone who donated money to us. After the violence, we, you know, those guys were really in a bad way. And we asked for donations. we asked for $5 donations from anyone who was interested, because Ian and I just didn't have the means to take care of those guys the way that they needed. They needed to move more than they, like, Onyango Jagwasi, like he had to move. His house was looted. He had to move twice, all within, you know, like 6 weeks. You know, we just, like, we needed to move those guys from where they were living to somewhere relatively safer. Yeah, there was a lot of violence. The problem was, besides just the violence, was that, you know, for a couple months, there was a curfew, so clubs weren't open, so those guys couldn't work. And they all have families and extended families that they are the breadwinner for.
Yeah.
And there was no work for them. I mean, you know, it was, for a while, you couldn't even go on the street, so...
Plus the fact that their houses were looted and...
Yeah.
Completely trashed.
Yeah, I mean, it was a situation that hopefully no one ever has to go through.
Where, these were just... I mean, who was doing the looting? What was this violence based on?
Well, the violence was based on the outcome of the election.
Right.
Basically...
The wrong person won.
Well, basically, the person who was in power retained power.
Yeah.
Like pretty much all African countries, you know, the borders of Kenya are totally arbitrary.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, drawn in this case by the British, you know?
Yeah.
So you've got this country that is really a collection of, you know, several large ethnic groups and then, like, dozens and dozens of smaller ones. And Kenya has always been, in Africa, one of the more stable countries, one of the places where those kind of, like, ethnic divisions had pretty much stayed under the surface.
Yeah.
People had managed to, you know, live their lives and you know, not have trouble. And then this election seemed very, very shady, and just overnight, just, you know, those differences and divisions just erupted, basically. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of the violence was along tribal lines, basically. The guys in our band are Luo, and Raila Odinga was the Luo candidate for president that it appeared had won the election.
Yeah.
He was, Luo has never been president of Kenya. The current president, the president that he was facing, the incumbent, was Mwai Kibaki, who is of Kikuyu ethnicity. And he had been the president since, I think, 2000. And Kikuyu is the largest ethnic group in Kenya.
Yeah.
Luo is, I believe, the third largest.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was just a general feeling like, well, everybody else has screwed this up. Let's give the Luos a shot. You know? They haven't screwed it up yet.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people were pulling for Odinga. I can't honestly stand here and tell you that, oh, this was the Kikuyu's caused all these problems, or the Luo's caused all these problems.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's not clear.
Well, you know, really, there's no winners in this situation.
Yeah.
So,
but your guys, their lives got wrecked.
Yeah.
In the process.
Yeah. So, you know, and they're, if those guys have problems, usually, you know, it's something manageable, and Ian and I combined, we can make something work, you know, send them some money or something. Because, Ian's working on a doctoral dissertation.
Yeah.
And I play in a band. So,
yeah.
You know, we're not necessarily the most flush individual. So, you know, when this happened, it was beyond our means. So that's why we asked for donations. And
you got them.
And we got them. And we got, you know, it was like one of those things, you know, in the age of the internet, it was one of those things where, you know, we had the idea on a Sunday afternoon. I wrote an email to people in my email address book, which is a very limited amount of people. And, you know, I went out to eat. I came home. I had like 6 donations already.
Wow.
People had sent it to their friends. The next day it was like, you know, blogs had picked it up.
Wow.
By the end of the week, we were on NPR, and they even had Onyango in Kenya on NPR talking with us.
Yeah, I heard
that. I mean, it was like, all of a sudden, overnight, it was like this big deal. And you know what? If it weren't for that, I don't know. I don't know what would have happened,
yeah.
Honestly. I mean, it was really, really...
scary.
Really scary, yeah. Thank You Very Quickly is a song thanking everybody for helping us out.
dinga ok noringo sami udo si do si pedu toringi alexo si pa ok noringo.
Among the band members, between you and the other guys, bridging those cultural gaps sort of through music and just sort of getting to know each other, do you think that that sort of relationship that you have among each other has made the music sort of more real than something that would have just been put together for the sake of putting two American rock guys?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, overall, we've just been really lucky. The way that we started was just kind of like, yeah, let's try this, you know?
Yeah.
And that was it. That was as big as our aspirations were.
And for the love of the music itself.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, the biggest thing we were thinking of at that time was like, hey, maybe that chord progression will work with this lick.
You know?
Let's see if it works, you know? Oh, it works. Cool. You know, that was it. That was all we were thinking of.
Yeah.
And like each step has, you know, it's gone to another level, and you know, we've just been really lucky. I mean, we definitely have grown a lot. I mean, I think our new album musically reflects, you know, the time we've spent together and the time we've spent playing together. I think that musically it's a little more cohesive. I feel that I speak for everyone in the band when I say this. Ultimately, we just want to make good music.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really the most important thing to us. And all the other stuff that's gone on around us, you know, I mean, we didn't sign up for any of it, really. You know, we've managed to stay together through it, and it's because we like music, you know.
Yeah.
And we want to make good music, and I feel like I've never heard a band that sounds like Extra Golden before.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes me really happy, and I know it makes everyone else happy, and everyone else really wants to like continue in that direction to make music that is new, you know. I mean, I don't think that music has to be like, music doesn't have to be like totally innovative or something I've never heard before to be good music. For us, it's just like, that's the hand we've been dealt.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely went to great lengths and great distances to put this band together, but being that, and I don't want to fall into cliche zone, but being that music is that international language, I mean, I'm sure it's going to last for a long time, and people are going to be listening to these songs for a long time. So
I hope so. I mean, we're getting ready to do these dates in the States now, and you know, in one way, it's kind of like, oh, back to the grind, because the English tour was so posh. But like, you know, I think we're all actually kind of like salivating at the idea of like playing in bars and nightclubs again, because like there's just so much more for us. There's so much more energy coming from the crowd. Power that gives you like can't be underestimated.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all you have to do is play in like a seated concert hall to, you know, 700 like 60-year-old people, and you
Yeah.
So I think we're all really, really looking forward to the U.S. dates.
Well, April 14th is coming up pretty fast, and I might make a road trip up there to the Comet.
Yeah, you should come up.
Pizza place in D.C., yeah.
They have good pizza. they do, actually. Yeah, you should come up.
You guys are coming to D.C., and then dengue fever is coming through here.
Are they coming to Richmond?
They're playing at a bowling alley.
Well, enjoy dengue fever. We played a couple shows with dengue fever on our first tour, and they were definitely favorites of the Kenyans.
Really?
Yeah, they love dengue fever.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, it's another band that's sort of like, you know, how did this happen? The world is just smaller, and musicians can get together, and they don't have to all be from the same country, and it's awesome. And
trust me, it helps.
Yeah.
I mean, if everyone in our band lived down the street and we had a van, like, my life would be a lot easier. They're good, though, dengue fever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
Can you recommend any older Benga stuff?
Well, you know, that's another, man, that's another, I mean, that was another reason initially when we had the offer to do that first tour. That was one of the other things that we were thinking about. It's like, Kenyan music is just, it's totally unexposed.
Mm.
It's very unknown. I mean, there's Kora players coming out of the woodwork, you know, but Kenyan music is tough to find. I mean, as far as like readily available stuff, there's a record by Owino Missiani called Benga Blast.
Okay.
That's pretty, I can't remember who put that out.
Yeah.
But it's not anything too obscure.
Well, so I'll look for that one, Benga
Blast.
Yeah, look
for anything by Owino Missiani or Victoria, there's a Globe Style did a Victoria Kings CD.
Do you have a little record collection? Did you find any vinyl when you were over there?
I found some, yeah.
Yeah? Lucky you.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Kenyan singles.
45s?
Yeah, a good friend of mine is the African music director at the Voice of America.
Oh, wow.
And, I've gone into their archives a few times. For some reason, Leo Sarkeesian, who started the program, he went to Kenya at some point in the early 70s, and for some reason, like, he met someone there who every month for, like, I don't know how many years, sent Leo every single that came out.
Oh, my God.
So the Voice of America has, like, hundreds of Kenyan singles. Hundreds
wow.
of them.
It would just be awesome to have a compilation of that stuff.
Well, we're working on it.
You are?
Yeah.
That's good news.
Yeah, Ian and I have a label. It's very, very scrappy, but we've got one thing, big thing that we've been working on for a while that hopefully is going to come out in the next 2 months. And then another thing we've been working on is, some more Benga stuff, like some sort of classic 70s kind of Benga.
That's awesome. Yeah, man, keep us posted on that, too.
Yeah, well.
That's always really exciting. Well, thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks for playing our record.
It's a pleasure. And, you know, Alex, I'm glad that we got to talk to you about everything that has happened in the past, I guess, 4 years of this band's existence.
Yeah.
And good luck to you on your tour. And
thanks a lot.
Hope to see you soon.
Hopefully you'll make it up here. All right, cheers.
Yeah, take care, man. See ya.
Bye.
Tumniko dua.
Daniel Owino Messiani and Shirati Band, famous Kenyan musician that Alex had actually recommended to me from Benga Blast, the CD compilation, which can be easily found online and also can be probably ordered from a store or something. I'm not allowed to talk about buying stuff. Anyway, Owino Missiani and doing Meg Nyangi, which I really sounds very much like an adaptation of a melody made famous also by Franco at Loke Jazz. I'm going to have to check that out, but I'm pretty sure. And we'll finish out the show here with John Amutabi Nzenze, Angel Like Twist, from another Kenya sampler. Thanks a lot. So here we go.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be in a new